Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. I appreciate you all tuning in. I appreciate all the feedback that I've been getting. This episode is going out to a friend of mine who asked me to comment on some recent incidents that have been going on in Hamden, Connecticut. And also, this episode is also going out to my daughter who told me to shorten up the intro music. So this is for her, as well as my friend. So this episode is going to be about current events. We're just going to kind of title it Current Events. And we're just going to look and see what's going on with the recent shooting in Hamden / New Haven, Connecticut. The actual shooting happened in New Haven, but it was involving Hamden police officers and Yale police officers. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So stay tuned and we're going to get to it. But first, let me just once again mention my business. If you have a promotion opportunity coming up, I'm the man to call. Obviously, as a retired police captain, I have the experience of having taken these tests, scored well enough to be promoted. And also, I have experience in sitting on the other side of the board. I've actually been a panelist for a number of different cities all across Connecticut. And I've talked to a number of individuals. I sat on the panels with people I've discussed, what the panelists are discussing. I've been in there and I've been a proctor for two different test-taking agencies. One was from Ohio and the other one was an agent that many police departments around the state of Connecticut use. So that is my business. If you have any promotional opportunities coming up, please give me a call. Visit my website, hunterpolicetraining.com. Give me a call. Send me an email, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com or hunterpolicetraining@gmail.com. Hit me up. Let me know what I can do to help you out to score well on your next promotional test. Remember, this opportunities that I have and the testing procedures and the testing consultation and everything like that I have is not simply for police officers. It's geared towards fire officers, fire personnel, correctional officers, or anyone really of any background who's may need to take some type of oral presentation, test, some type of job interview or anything like that. I can help you work on your skills and tell you what you're doing right, tell you what you're doing wrong in order for you to succeed and get far on that type of job. So that's where we're at. Hit me up on the website. I've also got a number of different services coming along. Those services are going to be about background checks. They're going to be about pistol permit classes, helping people get their pistol permits. It is going to be NRA certified. I mean, it's not going to be presented by the NRA, but I am NRA certified. It has some credentials to it. Also got some other things coming along. I've been working on a couple more business projects coming up. Stay tuned for those things. So in the meantime, here we go. Let's delve into what's going on in current events. April 16th, about 4 a.m., there was an attempted robbery in the city of Hamden, Connecticut. In response to this attempted robbery, obviously the police get there to respond. They talk to witnesses. They get the information about this car that is possibly one in this attempted robbery. An officer, a short time later, sees what he believes to be the vehicle that is wanted in the attempted robbery. Obviously, he starts calling in on the radio, sees the car go from Hamden into New Haven, Connecticut. Now, for those of you who may be in another state or not familiar with the geography of Connecticut, Hamden and New Haven, Connecticut are sister cities or border cities. You can literally jump from one to the other. So he calls it in. Before New Haven police respond, a Yale New Haven police officer, who are certified police officers, according to state Connecticut standards, go to the Connecticut Police Academy and everything like that. They are, even though they work for Yale University, the Hamden officer and the Yale New Haven police officer respond and box the car in. As soon as the car stops, as soon as the car slows to a halt, stops, it is believed that the driver of the car then exits the car. Meanwhile, the Hamden police officer, who's now behind the vehicle, and I'm going to put the description of this in the link so you guys can go to YouTube and watch this, watch the actual video of the event. You can see that the Hamden police officer then gets out. He's now behind the car and he starts firing off rounds. He darts to the sidewalk, starts firing rounds into the passenger side, and then tactically relocates to a different area in order to not be hit by any passing rounds. So that's where we're at. And as a result of that, the result of the investigation, preliminarily anyway, what we know so far. So while this is going on, the police officer then fires, and that's where we're at. In response to this, there is now an upward in community because the preliminary investigation has yielded that there were no firearms in the car. It was not the original car that was wanted in the attempted robbery that occurred in Hamden. It's not the occupant of the car had done nothing wrong. The passenger in the car, a female, was hospitalized. She will survive. It seems as if she will survive. She was wounded and injured, but nothing life-threatening. So she will survive, which is all good news. This is where we're at. Now, as a result of this, once again, we're talking about police shootings. We're talking about police who have arrived on the scenes, who immediately start taking action. And that action is firing every weapon. So I've talked about this in a number of podcasts. In fact, the whole country has been talking about this. And here we are happening right down the street in my neighborhood in the state of Connecticut. So I'm going to try to give the best answers that I can. We don't have all the facts. Now, I know that many people will always say, well, police officers always say we don't have the facts. We always say, wait and see. This is always the narrative that happens. We see things on videos, and we always say, well, we don't know what happened up to this point. We don't know what's going on over here. And that seems to be some type of excuse, or it is the opinion of many people who think that that is simply an excuse that police officers give to give cover to their fellow employees and to give cover to their compadres and cohorts and to give excuses. Let me try to put your mind at ease that that is not my mentality. I think that police officers should be held accountable when and if they do something wrong, but we do have to wait and see. I've said it before that I think that the shooting of Samuel DeBose occurred with the University of Cincinnati police officer was completely and dead wrong, even though they failed to get a conviction of him. I think that the shooting of Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old, I think that was bad tactics by the officer. And I think that was a tragedy and travesty of justice in both of those cases. But you know, here we are. So we have to talk about these things. What I want to give is my perspective. Now, let me just talk about a few things. We'll go over a few things. Is what I really want to gear this episode towards is towards the training of police officers and what we're trained to do, how we should be responding. Now, I don't believe that, at least from anything that I've seen, I don't think that anything that the police officers done so far has been overly egregious. Now, that may seem, once again, like this is another police officer just taking up for the other police officers who possibly had done something wrong. But let me just run you through what happened. So let me just talk to you a little bit about a couple of case laws in which officers are allowed to use force including deadly force. Tennessee versus Garner was a 1985 case that made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And under that, it held that when an law enforcement officer is pursuing a fleeing suspect, that the officer may not use deadly force to prevent escape unless the officer has probable cause to believe that the suspect poses a significant threat of death or serious physical injury to the officer or others. It was found that the use of deadly force to prevent escape is an unreasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment in the absence of probable cause. Now, going forward, so what did we learn? What are police officers taught? And this should be throughout the country, right? This is the U.S. Supreme Court. So this should be the standard by which all officers are operating. The use of deadly physical force in unarmed and non-dangerous fleeing felon is unconstitutional. The officer must be able to articulate that the fleeing individual possesses a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another if allowed to flee. So this is when officers can use deadly force in order to apprehend someone. Now, we should understand that police officers are allowed to use deadly physical force or deadly force against persons who are, number one, using deadly force against them or are about to inflict serious bodily injury against them. Right. So in other words, a police officer doesn't have to stand there and let his butt get kicked, for lack of better terminology. Right. He doesn't have to stand there and take a whooping, risk losing an eye, risk losing a limb before he can use deadly physical force, before he can use deadly force. So the police officer has a right to protect himself and to protect the public from any type of deadly physical injury or serious physical injury. Obvious. So, you know, I think that that's pretty much obvious. So the two cases, once again, that reflect this are, number one, 1995. I'm going to read from you the American Bar Association. In 1985, in Tennessee versus Garner, the U.S. Supreme Court, struck down a Tennessee statute that allowed a police officer to use all necessary means to effect arrest. That is very harsh language. All necessary means to effect arrest. In other words, if a police officer was going to arrest someone, then they could take any and every single measure in order to effect that arrest. Let me continue reading from this. Of an individual whom the officer suspected was fleeing or forcibly resisting detention but did not pose a danger. The use of deadly force to prevent the escape of all felony suspects, whatever the circumstances, is constitutionally unreasonable. The 6-3 decision said. So back in 1985, the U.S. Supreme Court decided this case based on the merits of what was going on. So a police officer, in the case of Tennessee versus Garner, was attempted to effect an arrest. The suspect then ran away. Police officer then obviously shot him, killed him. A lawsuit ensues, and here you have it. You guys can read about this in Wikipedia or Google it and get more understanding. But this is one of the premier cases involving the use of deadly physical force, right? So we understand that police officers can use force and they can effect arrest. Does that attempt to effect arrest, does that attempt to take someone into custody mean that you have the right to kill them if they refuse or resist? Now, it's one thing to resist an arrest, and it's another thing to resist and to actively pose a danger and threat to someone. Right. If somebody tries to fight me off as a police officer, I'm trying to arrest them, and they're fighting me off, pushing me off, I don't have the right to take out my gun and shoot them. However, if that same person is now fighting me off and I'm about to lose consciousness because they're choking me out, because they're about to hit me in the head with a rock or whatever, that does not mean I have to take that. Right. I have every single right to do what is necessary in order to defend myself or another person, etc. So I think that that's fairly understandable. 4 years later, reading from the American Bar Association from their news archives, which is dated 2018, 4 years later, in Graham versus Connor, the court said deciding whether an officer used excessive force requires careful attention to the facts and circumstances of each particular case, including the severity of the crime at issue, whether the suspect poses immediate threat to the safety of officers or others, and whether he is actively resisting or attempting to evade arrest by flight. The decision added the reasonableness of a particular use of force should be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene, with an allowance that police often must make split-second decisions. An officer is attempting to take someone into custody, attempting to do his or her job. He sees someone who's actively resisting. Now, this particular case, Graham versus Connor, they gave a number of steps, a number of parameters. First parameter is the circumstances of each case. That's number one, right? What's going on? Number two, they had to include the severity of the crime and issue. So what's the crime? Let's take a look at what's going on in New Haven. So we look at all the facts and circumstances in this Hamden, New Haven incident. We understand that there was an attempted armed robbery. So not just an attempted robbery, which could be someone just snatching a purse away from a little old lady, but this is an armed robbery, obviously armed with a knife or a gun or some other instrument which is capable of causing serious physical injury. Whether the suspect poses an immediate threat to the safety of other officers. Once again, comparing this to the situation that's going on in New Hamden, this person is armed. They're now fleeing the scene. They're now riding around in the streets of New Haven. Does that person pose a risk? And I think the answer to that has to be yes. They tried to rob one person. Now, we're not talking about the people that ultimately pulled over, but we're talking about what's going on in the officer's mind. He sees a suspect vehicle. So you have to understand. So now what's in his mind is there's this person or these people have already robbed or tried to rob one person. They have brandished some type of weapon, firearm and or knife. This is all what's going on in his head. This is obviously being relayed across the radio platform that obviously Hamden, Yale, and New Haven PD all shared, or Hamden PD is able to communicate somehow with the other agencies. So does this person, if stopped, does he pose a threat to the officers? Of course. Is this person, if not apprehended, do they pose the chance and the opportunity to rob someone else? Of course they do. And whether he is actively resisting or attempting to evade arrest by flight. This is what's going on in each and every officer's mind in any and every situation and circumstance. These are the two statutes, U.S. Supreme Court decisions, that govern how most police officers are going about their day-to-day duties and operations. The decision added that the reasonableness of a particular use of force should be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene, with an allowance that police often must make split-second decisions. So let me just talk a little bit about the training that these officers get and understanding what the split-second decision means. I had the hindsight, we all have the hindsight of looking at this video. I'm in the comfort of my own home as I'm making this audio podcast. You're in the comfort of your home or your car or wherever you're watching this particular video at. So you're not the officer. You have to put yourself in the officer's mindset. You have to understand what that officer sees and what he doesn't see, what he hears and what he doesn't hear, the smells, and understanding all this type of thing, and his angle and viewpoint, and understanding what a reasonable officer is doing. This idea of split-second decisions. Now, we can talk about training all day and all night. We can talk about how officers are trained. We can talk about, as a lieutenant, as a captain, I would often talk to my troops at roll call about how to position our vehicles, how we must avoid crossfire. We talk about how to box people in, how to make sure that we put, before we pull people over, that we have adequate backups, particularly those who are wanted for serious crimes. Don't try to make a motor vehicle stop before you have adequate presence, other police officers within your presence, before you put your wigwags on your or your takedown lights, however you're going to attempt the stop. All this is part of the training that we all receive, in addition to the training that we get in the academy about how to perform high risk stops. So this is all the training that we're getting. So this is what is operating within this Hamden officer's mind, that the training that he has received, more than likely from the Connecticut State Academy or wherever he went to and received his training, 16-year veteran, according to news articles, so he's had some time on the job, he understands his job, and he's been through this before. Obviously, in the state of Connecticut, let me just continue with this training aspect, state of Connecticut, you must recertify every 3 years. So with that, every 3 years, you have to sit through firearm. Every year, we have to go through firearms class. So every year, we have to talk about the use of force. Every year, we have to talk about, and I'm sure that they do short shoot, don't shoot scenarios and things like that. So we have to be put through that type of training every year for firearms training. In addition to roll call training that we often receive on new laws and new updates and things like that. We have to recertify every 3 years about the laws of arrest, about constitutional search and seizure. There's a whole host of areas that we have to recertify in. And I'll talk a little bit about our training in a short while. So this is what's going on in this officer's mind. So when he gets out the car, what he sees, according to news reports so far, what he says is that when he gets out of the vehicle, as the officer, Hamden officer, exits the vehicle, he's now in the back of the vehicle. Once again, this can be watched and viewed on YouTube. He can see what he believes that the driver of the car then exits his vehicle. So he begins to fire off rounds and while he makes his strategic relocation. So what does that mean? What this means is that he's got this idea in his head of why is this person exiting the car? And I'm going to tell you, as a police officer, when your adrenaline is flowing because you have performed a high risk stop, this is a Hamden police officer who's in New Haven now, probably fairly unfamiliar with the territory. He sees someone getting out of his car at 4 a.m. So why is this person getting out of his car? This person may have been armed. Why is this person getting out of his car? Did the officer tell him to stay in his car? If he did, then the refusal to obey the commands of an officer can really make the hairs of one's head stand up and really create a certain level of fear. So these are some of the more of the ideas that are going on in the police officer's head. We have to continue to wait and see what the verdict is going to be, see what the state police is going to say, because there's more information that's going to be coming out. There's more information that we're going to be hearing about. And let me tell you something about news reports. News reports are often wrong, are often inaccurate. There's such a rush to be first, and we have to get back to this rush to be right and correct. I'm not going to say whether the officers were right or wrong in this because I don't know, and I want to be right. So many times and too many times, people are chiming in about circumstances in the rush to be first instead of the rush to be correct. We have to take our time to do the investigation. Once again, it may sound like I'm just taking people's side, but you know, you have to hear all the facts and circumstances. You have to hear every single side. Are there other videos that we have to see? Are there other angles of the video that we have to look at? And so you have to understand all this. How many shots were fired? We understand, yes, so far that there were no charges against the couple in the car. They were not the couple that were wanted. There were no firearms found, no shots were fired by them or anything like that. So it does seem extremely damning. I get it from first glances. It seems extremely damning. But when we review the case law of Tennessee versus Garner and Graham versus Connor, as I mentioned, then you have to understand what's going on in the police officer's mind. We want to talk about a little bit about these split second decisions. And I talked about how we can train people to make sure that they have adequate backup. We can train people to make sure that they have plenty of lighting when pulling people over. We can tell you about all these different circumstances about how to perform a high risk motor vehicle stop. There's a military quote that I once heard that says something along the lines of that no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. What does this mean? That we can plan for the best motor vehicle stop. We can plan for the best takedown. We can plan for every advantage and everything like that. However, will it survive the first contact? It may not happen that way, right? We can plan to box these people in, make sure they drive down a certain street, have them drive over spike strip. We can do every single plan in order to make everything go right. But that does not mean that once we get out of the classroom, that we get out of the building and attempt to implement those plans, that is going to fall through exactly how we laid out. Because unfortunately, the person we're trying to arrest, and they're not always enemies, refer to my podcast about warriors and guardians, that the people that we're trying to arrest or apprehend or take into custody or just speak to has not been in our briefing, and they will not understand our plans, and they might not go along with us. So we have to understand that these things can quickly go awry, and officers have to rely on the training that they get in order to perform at their best level and to give it their all and make sure that they go home safe. So what does that mean? I can plan to stop this person at a certain point. I complain to exit my vehicle, keep my flashlight on them. I complain that they're going to run, I'm going to go this way. I complain to jump over the... I complain for all that, but that doesn't mean that it's going to go exactly smoothly. And so police officers have to be given the latitude in order to operate smoothly and based upon their best training. So having said that, we have to keep these things in mind. So what have we talked about so far? Let me just sum up what we talked about so far. We talked about the incident that's going on in New Haven. We have to give it time. We have to not be in such a rush to be first, right? This is where the police department is often at odds with the politicians. I understand the mayor of New Haven has chimed in and condemning these acts already, but let's get the facts first. We have to get the facts first. I think that what's prudent for politicians to say is, listen, we're looking into this, and you can rest assured that there will be no cover-up. You can rest assured that the full extent of this office is going to be behind a full and thorough investigation, and we're going to get to the truth. I think that politicians should really leave it there and not be so quick to chime in and condemn everything. I realize that the state that we're in today, as far as relations between the police and the public, is probably at one of the all-time lows within our history. But speaking this type of thing, I think, is irresponsible, quite honestly, and it really only panders to one particular group of people, and that's the outraged citizens. So I think that politicians really need to be very circumspect. Trust that you have good, solid investigators who are not going to hide the truth and who are going to get to the truth and not be afraid to reveal the truth. And if it happens that the Hamden officer was wrong, if he was wrong for being out of his city, if he didn't have permission from his supervisor and permission from his agency to leave town in order to perform this felony stop in another town, then so be it. Let's deal with the consequences. If it turns out that he did not have reasonableness and the level of statutory standards to fire his weapon into the vehicle, then let's deal with it. But let's get to the truth, and let's not be afraid to get to the truth. So that's where I stand kind of on that right now. So let's just wait and see what's going to happen. Let's get to the truth before we start passing out judgments. So let me just talk a little bit more about training. So in the former, I gave another podcast in which I talked about warriors and guardians, and I mentioned a lady by the name of Sue Ra, who was the head of the Washington State Police, their training council concerning police officers. And I want to read to you their curriculum in order to be a police officer. Now, this that I'm going to read to you is from the Washington State Police website. It is going to talk about some of the... Now, they have a 720-hour core block of syllabus. This is the Basic Law Enforcement Academy. So I'm assuming that every police officer in the state of Washington has to go through all these type of trainings and all these different classes in order and must perform at a satisfactory level, more than likely a 70 or 80. Probably 80 is passing, but maybe as low as 70. You know, I don't know what their passing scores are for their particular test. This is what they have. And I want to read to you some of the classes that they have to take are History of Policing. They also have Plato's Guardians, Philosophical Warriors. Now, if you listen to my podcast about the warrior and guardian mindset, then you can remember me talking about this lady Sue Ra, who wrote a piece for the Harvard Kennedy School. Her and another author had written a paper for that particular school, so you guys can listen to that podcast. So this is the head of this organization, the head of this particular organization, the state police, over their police officer training council, wrote this article in favor of the guardian mindset for police officers. She has taken a lot of heat. Much of the staff has either resigned or just been in full-out protest. However, she is keeping going with her understanding. And part of her curriculum is now the history of policing, beginning in American policing, modern policing, political era, reform era, and community era of policing. Plato's Guardians, Philosophical Warriors, Warrior to Guardian Culture. Guardians are both warrior and philosopher. Book the Republic, Meet the Director, right? So this is one of the classes. They also have classes on the Foundation of Blue Courage, a number of different classes on the Foundation of Blue Courage, firearms and dangerous weapons, discussion of recent events and demonstrations, property crimes, which I'm assuming would also include bias and bigotry, homicide, felony, murders, robberies, kidnapping, sex offenses, understanding perception and bias, implicit bias and its role in interaction and cultural intelligence, procedures of arrest, right? So these are all the things that they are being trained on. Now, this was updated or revised back in January 7th, 2019. So this is post-Eric Garner. This is post-Laquan McDonald. This is post probably even the Stephen Clark, which I think was 2018. Stephon Clark. So this is post many of the shootings, right? So they're constantly updating curriculum, and there's another aspect on here, critical thinking, crime prevention, critical thinking. They're constantly updating their role in their training. Let's converse that with the Connecticut State Police, with my own home state, and where this Hamden police officer no doubt has received his training. Now, this is from the Post Police Officer Standards and Training Council for here in the state of Connecticut. And they've done a number of changes. And I want to read to you many of the changes that have been done. In fact, the changes are concerning the hours. So the laws of arrest went from 18, before they were getting 18, and now they're getting 24 hours of training per academy session. Use of force was before 8 hours. Now it's 14 hours, almost double. Firearms went up from 76 hours to 86 hours. Shooting decisions and practical skills day, more hours are allotted for that. Went over 4 hours of handcuffing, was 2 hours. Now it's 4 hours of just handcuffing, how to take people into custody. They're gone from 20 hours of vehicle stop techniques to 20 hours of vehicle stop techniques. They're now up to 24 hours. 8 hours, note-taking and report writing, is now up to 20 hours. I think that's very significant because people, you need to write accurate, full, detailed reports, or you're getting 8 hours before. It's gone up substantially, up to 20 hours for that. So now their curriculum is 871 hours. It's not a competition, but these Washington State, according to theirs, was 720 hours for their core block. So this is not a competition. I'm just saying that it is what it is. You can look and see that. My point in saying this is that these are constant readjustments that are given to police training. So I realized that much of the community, I was listening to a podcast today in which they were talking about many of the circumstances that are going on with the schools. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But anyway, this particular podcast that I was listening to was talking about that particular issue. And they were saying that the remedy for this is a lot more training. My point in bringing this up is that there is a constant reassessment, as we can see by Washington State Police and this lady, Sue Ra, who was obviously an academic writing something for the Harvard Review, and also the Connecticut State Police. We can see that these are just two states. I'm sure that every state in the union is reassessing and going over their use of force and going over their firearms techniques and reviewing shoot, don't shoot decisions. We're all watching these viral videos. We're all getting an understanding. We're all trying to come to some kinds of consensus. So we're all trying to get there. We're all trying to get there together. So I think that the most important thing that we can do is to be patient, to keep engaged. Yes, keep engaged. And there are protests going on right now in Hamden and in New Haven. I would say keep protesting, keep writing your mayors. What we can do to fix these things. I always try to end this off with what we can do to fix these things. I would say keep listening, keep active, stay active. Demand more from your legislatures. Demand more from your police officers. Hold them accountable. Trust the system that it's going to do what it's going to do. We have body cameras now. We have all this type of video footage. Let the process work out. I know it's frustrating to hear. I know that we want justice now. We want officers to be more prudent in what's going on. But I tried to give you what's going on in the mind of an officer. The training that he has received, the case law that he operates under, the continual use of training that he gets every 3 years in Connecticut. And in Washington State, they had to do 24 hours every year. Now in Connecticut, you have to do 8 hours of firearms every year, and then every 3 years sit through 40 hours of, at least I believe it's at least 40 hours of training. Washington State, you have to sit through 24 hours of training. So there is training that is going on. There's training that is going on. There's a mentality, especially by this lady Sue Ra, to get the police officers to be more of guardians. I agree with her wholeheartedly to be more guardians. So what I tried to do is give you an understanding of what police officers are dealing with, the circumstances that they're dealing with, that they have to be clear and accurate about what they're doing, and try to give you the best understanding about what they're dealing with. So the court cases that I gave you, that they had to think about the circumstances that they're dealing with. They have to know the nature of the crime, how a prudent, reasonable officer would act under those same similar circumstances, and understand that they have to make split-second decisions. So based on this fact that we have to make split-second decisions, based on the fact that this Hamden officer had to make split-second decisions, based on the fact that he thought, according to the dispatch records and according to the preliminary robbery, that the suspects were armed, that they were probably going to another city. He, according to him, according to news reports, sees someone jumping out the car, et cetera, et cetera. Then his adrenaline starts to spike and he starts to take action. Now, we have to recognize and realize that sometimes this action that people are taking could be or could not be the right one. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, and I mentioned again, that the state of California is looking into changing. You guys can look at AB, that's their House Bill, AB 392. You can read the San Francisco Chronicle, in which they are trying to change from reasonableness of an officer using deadly force into a necessary officer using officer deadly force. Many groups are in opposition to this. Many pro-police groups are in opposition to this, and I can understand their hesitancy to wanting to go forward with that particular bill. It probably won't pass. I wrote a blog about that, but It probably won't pass, but we can see what's going on. So there is some change in the air. We have to continue to wait. And I understand that it seems like, you know, waiting, sitting around waiting while young men and young women are being gunned down. It seems very unfair to say this. And it hurts my heart. It breaks my heart to see. Listen, I would not have wanted to be in the car. Nobody would have wanted to have been in the car on that 4 a.m. in New Haven, Connecticut on our street on that day. It's got to be the worst nightmare of your life. But also, you got to understand that the police officer didn't want to be in a position where he may have lost his life. Yes, the police officer volunteered for the job. Yes, if the police officer is not fit for duty, he should not have been. Yes, we can look at all that. Yes, and we should look at all that. We should continue to question. We should, and I would be in support of doing a type of review of officers every 3 or 4 years to make sure that they are fit for duty physically and as well as mentally. I'm in support of all that, yes. But let's give the process some time. So let's give the process some time. Understand that the training is occurring, and maybe we'll revisit this in the months to come or in the weeks to come. In the meantime, guys, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe. Thank you for listening. Remember my business that I got going on, LMH Police Training and Consulting. If you've got a promotional exam coming up, I'm your man. Hit me up. Let me know what I can do to help you out. In the meantime, everyone, stay safe. Thank you for listening. Take care. If you like my podcast, if you don't like my podcast, please let me hear from you. If you got a topic for me to discuss, I talked about this because a friend of mine wanted me to talk about it. If you got something else you want to hear about my perception, and I'm going to give you my honest answer. My honest answer for this is today, I don't know. Today, I don't know. I'm waiting to see. And I stand behind everything that I stand behind the things that I've said concerning the previous shootings that I think that were completely unjustified. And I'm glad that these people are not police officers anymore. I'm glad about the situation in Arizona where the guy was on his ground. I don't think that man, that the officer should be a police officer anymore. I don't think that the University of Cincinnati officer should be an officer anymore. I am glad that justice was brought about the Florida police officer, Newman Raja. I'm glad that he's no longer a police officer. I'm glad that justice was served about him. And so that's it. So I thank you all for listening. That's it for everyone. Take care. Bye.